You're listening to WXYB, Indian Rocks Beach, Tampa, 1520 AM, the voice of Hillsborough Community College.
Talk radio.
The revolution will be broadcast.
Welcome to The Edge. I'm your host, Tom Smith. The ends justifies the means has been a principle that's been used throughout history to justify all sorts of atrocities. Modern restatements of that, such as never fear to hurt another in a just cause, and the greatest good for the greatest number of dynamics, which came from the American writer and founder of Scientology, L. Ron Hubbard, are used by that organization to justify a lot of its actions. Our guest today is Larry Brennan, who had a number of positions in organized Scientology. He was director of all Scientology legal operations outside of litigation worldwide from mid-1976 through mid-1981 as a legal branch one director of the Guardian's office worldwide. He held similar positions prior to that in the United States Guardian's office. He's worked on organized Scientology's corporate evolution in 1981 through 1983 and presented to David Miscavige, who's the head of Scientology, the planning for that. He was in charge of Scientology's special unit and watchdog committee member X in 1982 and 1983, working directly with David Miscavige on Scientology's corporate legal and other external affairs matters. Welcome to The Edge, Larry.
Hi, Tom, and it's real nice speaking with you again. I wondered, one thing last time when I first started speaking with you, I gave a little bit of wrong information on dates. I used a wrong decade, and I just wanted to, for the record, correct that. When I was talking about my time in the United States Guardian's office before I was at the Worldwide Guardian's office, I mentioned that in late 84 and 85 and the first half of 86, I was in the U.S. Guardian's office. That should have been the 70s, 74, 75, and 76. So for anybody keeping track of anything like that, hopefully that clarifies things and makes the timeline sound right.
Okay. We got that straightened out. The program you were on first, we kind of did a general overview of organized Scientology and a number of issues with that and your involvement with that.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, we're kind of going to focus on some more specific topics.
Okay, good.
So you want to take that away?
Yeah, sure. As you pointed out, we did do kind of a general overview, and in our last hour, we touched on how the current regime took over and how they did it and the lies behind it and abuses and cover-ups and all that. And I think basically I thought perhaps today we might be able to go into some more important specifics and something else that isn't addressed very much on how organized Scientology defends their actions and how one might best deal with it. In any event, first of all, I mean, the basic lie that we've talked about has been within their corporate structure. It's this massive corporate structure that spans the whole globe, full of trusts and unincorporated associations and corporations and what have you, and with contracts between all of them under the pretense that there's a separate structure and it's not centrally controlled. And we all know, and as we addressed it last time, that it is centrally controlled, and it's centrally controlled by David Miscavige. But what's interesting is, while they have gone through great pains, and I'll make a couple other little quotes here in a moment, to say it's not centrally controlled, it's interesting how they're undoing that illusion themselves. For example, there's a book about to be released, which has been kind of a buzz on the Internet, the unauthorized biography on Tom Cruise.
Mm-hmm.
And in response to it, apparently the Abelson, organized Scientology's attorney, said about Cruise, he said he's a parishioner and a well-respected parishioner, but that's what he is. And then to further the quote, it says, the only person who runs the church and makes policy decisions is David Miscavige.
Hmm. Yeah.
And that was an incredibly, in my opinion, damaging admission that Dave Miscavige is the only person who runs the church and makes policy decisions, because he's an RTC. And, of course, the church is supposed to be Church of Scientology International and all these other organizations, and it's clear that David runs them. And that was supported by an earlier statement that David had made in court, and well, actually something that was on RTC's website.
Now, what is the RTC? RTC is what the is a religious technology center. That's the name for it.
That's the name for what?
RTC.
Correct.
Okay.
That's right. Anyway, a quote that I've used before, but to put it in context of what that attorney just said, there's a quote on their own website where it says about David Miscavige, he authored the early 1980s reorganization of church corporate and management structures. So, wait a minute. So if he's authored them, and then they say, oh, he has nothing to do with them and he doesn't run them, it's a little bit thin.
Yeah.
In any event, if you compare the attorney's note about him being the only person who makes policy decisions and runs the church with some of his earlier declarations in court that we've used, and I'll mention one other little quote here, you know, one can see that they're starting to come apart. Their lies are starting to contradict each other, and I think it's good that that's coming out.
Yeah, before you do that, I just want to reference the the quote that Elliot Abelson made, which is the only person who runs a church and makes policy decisions, is David Miscavige. That was from an interview with Elliot Abelson in the Daily Mail, which is from the United Kingdom. Elliot Abelson being a general counsel for the Church of Scientology.
There you go. That's right.
Okay, go on.
That's right. Well, for example, back in the mid-1990s, when Miscavige was doing a declaration under penalty of perjury in the Wallersheim versus Church of Scientology in California case, I've taken stuff from that declaration before, but another just real short one, it says, this is a quote from Miscavige, I do not disregard the corporate lines of authority, responsibility, or control of any Church of Scientology. Contrary to the allegations of Wallersheim's declarants, lines of corporate authority in RTC and its relationship to other churches of Scientology are firm, and I see to it that they remain that way. And that one, I almost choked. That is such a lie, and we've dedicated a good part of the last show to give an example of how that is a lie and how he does control the other organizations of Scientology. But the point is, while they have built up all these lies in the past and have used them in other cases, they're now contradicting them for other PR purposes, such as in the examples that we just gave, which was Abelson's quote, and as well as the RTC website thing about David Miscavige authoring that whole corporate structure.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I thought that was rather interesting, and it's funny that even since last time, I've gone into other declarations that they've done in various court cases, even other people that they bring out to lie on behalf of David Miscavige, such as, for example, let me find one. I had one here from the Executive Director International, Guillaume, who's now kind of missing in action, but when he was in authority, he said, he made a declaration that he was the top person in the Church of Scientology International and nobody from outside the corporation had any control. And that was at a time that Miscavige was actually beating people in his department and people that were actually senior to him in what's called the Watchdog Committee. So the point is they've set up a paper trail of declarations and various circumstantial evidence that there's separate corporations and there's not a control by Miscavige, but it's falling apart now, and I think that's a good thing because the truth can get out. Without dedicating, I can dedicate any amount of time to this if we have time later. I have actually a lot of examples of these kinds of quotes and that, but I think probably the point is made.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to get to something, but I thought I would mention that the whole thing has been built on lies, and even with respect to their founder. Now, it's old news that so many claims by Hubbard with respect to his education and military record and all that were false. But what a lot of people don't know, or what most people don't know, actually, is that back, as we touched on in the last interview, when the mission corporate category sort-out mission was occurring, one of the things they were doing was trying to get a biography written on Hubbard. And the person on that mission who was in charge of that was Jerry Armstrong. And David Miscavige ran that mission. It was what was called the missions operations officer. Now, what happened, as we mentioned before, was that Jerry, in having, you know, whatever it was, 20, 28 sets of file cabinets on Hubbard's records, was finding that all that published stuff about his war record and history was false, and he wanted to get it corrected. And they refused to correct it, and they wanted that false information made available to the public as if it were true. Jerry got into a lot of trouble, and then, you know, everyone pretty much knows the history of what happened with Jerry and organized Scientology. Well, what people don't know is that in 1982 or 83, I forget which one it was now, the biography was continuing despite the problems they had with Jerry Armstrong. And Omar Garrison actually wrote the biography of L. Ron Hubbard. And it was called L. Ron Hubbard, His Life, His Loves, and His Letters. Now, David Miscavige, who was running organized Scientology from what was called Author Services at the time, had completely freaked out, and they were trying to get Omar to not publish it, and were trying to negotiate some sort of a deal with Omar whereby, quote, the church could get the rights to the biography so that they could kill it. But David was so savage that, and he upset Omar so much that Omar wouldn't negotiate with him, so I was picked to do the negotiation. So what actually happened with that biography was that Von Jung and myself were picked on behalf of, quote, the church, unquote, to negotiate with Omar, and we had three of Hubbard's attorneys, the Lentz brothers and Barry Litt, and we met with Omar and his attorney. And without going bowl by blow, we spent the day at it, and we negotiated, and we paid him off. And I got the master of the biography from Omar, along with all the publication rights. I went over to Author Services and handed it to Norman Starkey for David Miscavige.
Now, what is Author Services?
It was killed forever at that point. But
yeah.
That mission actually was successful. The mission corporate category started off. They did get a biography written. But the problem for organized Scientology is it was the truth.
Yeah,
not the trumped-up stuff on Hubbard.
Right. What is Author Services?
Well, Author Services, there is a PR thing and a true thing. The PR thing was that it was incorporated in early 82, and it was going to be a group of people that were outside of organized Scientology, outside of the Church of Scientology, that were going to represent the author, L. Ron Hubbard, for his fiction works. And, you know, deal, you know, the Battlefield Earth, the Mission Earth saga, all that sort of stuff, and make Hubbard money on his fiction works. But the truth of the transaction was, while it was separately incorporated, and it was run by David Miscavige, they actually ran the Church of Scientology from there, and I touched on that in our last interview. But we actually, when I was special unit in charge in WDCX, I used to have to go to Author Services and sit in the conference room with David Miscavige. So would people like Mark Yeager, who was the WDC chairman, and Steve Marlowe, who was running RTC, and he was appointed by DM to do that then. And we would be taking orders from David about how the church was to run. And in fact, they ran a piece of special unit that I was over from Author Services and lied about it later in court. And the piece was the litigation part of special unit, which was run by Marty Rathbun, and the intel part of special unit, which was run by Jeff Chevelle. Now, they were both my juniors, and I, you know, met with them daily and so forth, but David Miscavige and Norman really ran them because they continued to run the geo-dirty trick-style stuff on litigants. But so really, so the two answers to what is Author Services is, one is what I just said about, you know, it was this, quote, separate body to represent Hubbard. But in truth, it was just a shell where the control of the church was really coming from, or the control of organized Scientology was really coming from, even though it was buried. Here's the thing. If you read their declarations about this, you will see, like whether it's Guillaume's declaration or David Miscavige's declarations, you will see they'll say wording like, we have separate officers, we have separate offices, we have separate bank accounts. We do, and what they do is all the superficial stuff to make it appear that the corporations are separate, but they aren't. It's one big unincorporated association, really, run by David Miscavige. And anyway, I hope that answers the question.
Okay.
But that's where the stuff was really run from. But here's the thing. You know, one can, there are countless stories like the biography and all that that will demonstrate lies that have been done in the name of organized Scientology or lies in the control. But I thought of a story that would be useful to tell that most people don't know about because it leads to what I think is one of the most important things about how they hide. Like up till now, like in the last interview in that, we talked about how they hide behind, how they hid behind corporate structure, and even we just touched on it now. Last time we also talked about how they tried to hide their abusive policies under the label of their ecclesiastical policies and scripture and so forth, so you can't look into them. But yet there's a much more insidious thing they do where they've made most of their progress, that I would like to touch on, and I don't haven't seen anybody really talk about it too much, which is scholar opinions. They get opinions from some of the, you know, as it were, top scholars in the world, religious scholars, theological scholars, and so forth, saying Scientology is a religion, so shouldn't you listen to them? Well, let me tell you, if it's all right with you, I'll take a few minutes and tell you a little story and how they use scholars' opinions to save the day, and then address it, because I think it's an important issue.
Go ahead.
All right. First, it's on the flag move to Clearwater.
Now, first of all, what is for our listeners who don't know this?
Written up about that over the years.
Yeah, for our listeners who don't know this, first of all, just briefly tell them what flag is.
Okay, flag was at one time a ship, and it sailed, and it had top management. It had Hubbard on it, his wife, the top management people, and they delivered some flag-only courses and counseling and so forth.
Okay.
They decided that they needed to go ashore, and they set up in Clearwater, Florida, and it became a huge moneymaker, you know, million-plus-a-week money-making business of doing courses and what they call religious counseling and so forth, and they call it flag. But a little bit on the history of how it got there. And they also made a part of what was called the Church of Scientology of California at the time. This is like 1975, I think.
Okay.
Okay. So first of all, what happens is, everyone knows flags on a ship. There was no public knowledge that flag was going to come ashore in 75. And I was in the United States Guardian's office in the legal bureau at the time, and we get this cryptic telex, and it's coming from Hubbard's area. And it was send the person from legal who has the most knowledge about property purchase, etc., to Savannah, Georgia, and they picked the name of some inn in Savannah, Georgia, and have him wait there, and he'll be contacted. And it was all a big mystery to us, even in the United States Guardian's office, and usually, you know, we're the ones with that know everything, but we really didn't know what was going on. So they sent me, and so I went to this motel in Savannah, Georgia. And sure enough, a few hours later, this person shows up, Rick Merwin, and he had a position of Commodore's Staff 7. So he worked right under Hubbard, and 7 was a division that also dealt with things like properties. And I got briefed that flag was going to come to shore, it needed to come to shore, and we were going to search and check out the Savannah Hills Country Club to see if, in Savannah, Georgia, if that could be a proper location for flag. And there were a lot of direct orders from Hubbard on there. There were even parts of the mission that had to do with driving up and down the river and noting the smells to see if there's anything that might offend his sense of smell or what have you. And there was the very first use of what was called SLDLC, which is Southern Land Development and Leasing Corporation, which was a phony front group set up by organized Scientology and financed by the Church of Scientology of California and other areas. And it was not wanted known that Scientology was going to come ashore because it was known that there'd be a lot of opposition to it. So the this corporation, Southern Land Development Leasing Corporation, Rick Merwin and I were the first two, as it were, members of it. And we, and without giving the detail of it, we saw attorneys and various people, and we started negotiating about buying the country club. And it was owned at the time by the Teamsters Union, one of their pension funds. I forget the name of it. It was the Southeast and something or other Teamsters Union pension fund.
Okay.
And as we were checking it out, it became clear that this property wasn't going to work, and the price was going up on the property. Plus, Savannah did not have the necessary airport, so on and so forth, to accommodate what they thought would be a lot of international travel to Flag. So we bailed. And from Savannah, the mission went into Florida, and literally it was Duke Snyder from the Church of Scientology of California. He was the deputy guardian USGO at the time. He and Rick Merwin and others were literally going all around Central Florida, walking into hotels, asking if they wanted to sell it, until they found the Fort Harrison Hotel in Clearwater, which was owned by, I think it was Jack Tar Hotels at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, we negotiated purchasing that hotel as Southern Land Development and Leasing Corporation. Now, when it became clear that Florida was going to be the operation, there was another corporation set up called United Churches of Florida. And this elaborate scam devised in Hubbard's area, which was Southern Land Development and Leasing Corporation was buying property, leasing it to the United Churches of Florida, which is like, you know, allegedly all these different churches. And in turn, the United Churches of Florida would lease it to Scientology, Organized Scientology, which was just a complete farce. And it blew up in their face. I mean, it was just a major PR blow up in Clearwater. And they, because they were running off of some of the really abusive Hubbard policies that we quoted in the last interview, mm-hmm. they went right after anyone they perceived to be enemies, like the mayor, Cazares, and so forth. And the intention was to take over Clearwater and to take out all the enemies.
That's a fair game practice.
Oh, absolutely. All and right. And the Guardian's office at the time had a lot more, as it were, horsepower than like OSA and that does today. And they were carrying out dirty tricks on these people. But anyway, it all blew up, and it was all a mess. And a team of people assembled and worked, and Hubbard was right down there in the Clearwater area, and they worked underneath him. And they applied for various legal things, and they really got in trouble. And what happened was it became a legal mess as well as a PR mess. So what I did is I wrote a corporate program to establish Scientology in Clearwater. And part of it had to do with a really key thing, and that was their one Achilles heel, the one way they could really get kicked out, and that was that they didn't have a dealer's license. In Florida, in order to sell services, you have to have one of two things. Either, this is, at least was true in 75,
mm-hmm.
A dealer's license, and then you pay sales tax on that, or you have what's called a consumer certificate of exemption.
Mm-hmm.
And that exemption, like religious groups and so forth, can have, and they don't have to charge sales taxes. Well, of course, Organized Scientology wasn't going to get a dealer's license. So somebody down there applied for and got denied a consumer certificate of exemption without even coordinating with us in the USGO. It was run under Hubbard. So when I wrote the program to establish Flag there corporately, Hubbard wrote to me and said he approved the program, and this is really great because Miscavige later says, you know, he had nothing to do with running anything then, but anyway, he did. But Hubbard said his one worry was not having the consumer certificate exemptions that they could get kicked out of there, and he was right, they could, so I took it over. So now if you go to whatever their hall of records are in Tallahassee, you'll see a new application done in the name of Duke Snyder. Well, I did that application. And the reason that it was in the name of Duke Snyder was the corporation that Flag was at the time was the Church of Scientology of California, and Duke Snyder was the president. The GO controlled everything then corporately,
yeah.
Which DM controls now.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we sent submissions, and now I'm getting to my point, and that is how we got the approval was I attached scholar opinions, and in the United States Guardian's office, the year before that, I was out myself getting these scholar opinions, and they were a dime a dozen. I mean, if 10 scholars refused to say something positive about Scientology being a religion, you just discarded them. But if 2 would say it, then you'd use them, and you'd say, look what the theological scholars and religious scholars are saying. So I attached them, in a, you know, to sort of overwhelm Tallahassee on making that decision, because who are they to say Scientology is not a religion? Here is, you know, top theological scholars, so on and so forth. Now, Scientology uses this, organized Scientology does, all the time. They'll use such things as these scholars' opinions to get, you know, whether it's concessions from courts, like, you know, whether it's the European courts or the IRS or what have you, because it will all sound very overwhelming. Like, who is even the IRS to say what's a religion and what's not compared to scholars, right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Here's like, that was an example of how a potential major legal flop was handled using these scholars' opinions, right?
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing on why it's so irrelevant, really, and why not to fight them on the religious issue in the United States. And at least this is nothing more than my opinion, right?
Okay.
But you don't. First of all, there's 2 things about these scholars' opinions, and particularly for the U.S. One, they're not briefed on what's really happening in Scientology. They might be briefed on the fact that Scientology believes in immortality. Okay, you're a Thetan, you live forever. The fact that they have a set of practices that lead up towards going for that immortality, which you can call auditing or courses or whatever. It's very, very easy under very loose definitions in America to say that it's a religion.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost not even arguable in the United States, you know, where we have such open definitions and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And what organized Scientology wants you to do is to fight on that argument, because they've spent millions of dollars there, and they'll drop on you just tons of scholars and all these people saying that they're a religion. The point isn't even in the United States, it isn't whether or not they're a religion. The point is what they do as a, quote, religion. For example, in the United States, you don't have an absolute religious freedom. Like, for one thing, let's say you believed in a sun god. And I'm not making fun of this. Let's just say you believe in a sun god.
Okay.
And you worship this sun god, and you believe that you obtained your own immortality through worshiping the sun god and following the commandments of the sun god. Well, that's a protected religious belief, and you can believe that, and that's fine, and surely you can get scholars to say that that's religious.
Mm-hmm.
But if part of your practice is to sacrifice virgins, that isn't protected.
No.
That goes beyond religious freedom. It goes into crimes.
Yeah.
So you can't sacrifice virgins in America, although in some areas of the world, at some point in time, apparently people could sacrifice virgins, and they did,
yeah,
as part of the religious beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
But my point in that example is Scientology also does many things that are illegal, immoral, or wrong that it's not a defense to even say that they're a religion, although they try to frame the argument so that if it's decided they're a religion, then it's a defense. For example, you know, there's horrible things that have been done where people have been beaten, where lies have been made, where perjury has been committed. You know, I'm not even going to name names, but that wonderful young woman who died horribly over a long period of time in the Fort Harrison Hotel, of which cases were done, how she was held there against her will, how she was not given the medical help that was needed because of their beliefs. I submit that lots of those things violate the laws of the land,
yes,
and those should become the issues in how you defend yourself from Scientology, how you frame it. But they will try to every time do 2 things. One, say their religion and their practices are protected, and 2, in case there is any liability there, to say that the corporate structure shows that, you know, the ones really responsible for it aren't responsible, like Miscavige controlling it and that. And both of them are thin. They're paper, paper thin, and they're easy to address if you will stick with the actual issues. Now, I don't know if that's making sense, because I'm trying to do it real briefly and not belabor the point, and I don't know if I need to elaborate on it at all, but the point is, they get the scholars, one, by not telling them a lot of the bad stuff, so that's not commented on.
Yeah.
And then, 2, Even though you have these scholars behind you who say that you're a religious organization, it really has nothing to do with when you commit crimes. And I don't know, does that make sense?
Yes, it does. In fact, there was a good article in the in 2006 in the St. Petersburg Times that quoted some religious scholars who were previously used by organized Scientology to give some validation to their practices. And this was on the disconnection practice, which is enforced disassociation between family members who are no longer considered desirable by the hierarchy in organized Scientology, and other family members who are members in Scientology are essentially ordered and coerced to disassociate from these people, and it has harmed families. And here's some quotes here from three religious scholars. This was from the St. Pete Times. "I just think it would be better for all concerned if they just let them go ahead and get out, and everyone goes their own way and not make such a big deal of it. The policy hurts everybody." That was from a quote from J. Gordon Melton from the Institute for the Study of American Religion in Santa Barbara, California. Here's another one. "It has to do with feeling threatened because you're not that big. You do everything you can to keep unity in the group." And that's from Frank K. Flynn of Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri. And here's one more. "Some people I've talked to, they just wanted to go on with their lives, and they wanted to be in touch with their daughter or son or parent. The shunning was just too painful. And I don't know what it was accomplishing. And the very terms they use are scary, aren't they?" And that was from Newton Maloney from the Fuller Theological Seminary in Pasadena, California. So some of these scholars they've actually used, when they actually take a look at the overall practices, some of these practices that they're involved in are harmful.
Mm-hmm.
And in my view, I think this enforced disconnection practice really infringes on human rights when it goes in there and actually cleaves apart a family, when it disrupts a family, when it alienates a father from his daughter, or from a mother from son, from brother from sister. That's gone way too far. Gone outside. It isn't as extreme as murdering virgins, but it's murdering a family. That family will never. I don't care if they get back together in 5 years or something for some reason. That family will never be the same. That there will always be that gray area, that dark spot in the family's history, that very sad time. So this practice, it really, in organized Scientology, it is rather extreme. It isn't a case like in the Catholic Church where they have excommunication. Basically, in the Catholic Church, the excommunication just involves the church hierarchy versus the person who's excommunicated. There's no, it's not advocated that any of the members, the parishioners, disassociate from this person. It's just simply that the hierarchy will shun that person. But in Scientology, it actually extends right to not only the hierarchy itself, but the members and family members. So this kind of thing is just unconscionable. And
it's unbelievable, and I can tell you two comments on that. I mean, I absolutely agree with you. One, I have been reading a great deal lately, and including there's an online private group for ex-Sea Org members. These are members of a Scientology staff that were in a group called the Sea Organization, right?
Yeah.
And I am, even recently especially, I've been reading one story after the other of some kid that grew up as a child in organized Scientology and how abusive it was and how they didn't get their education, how their parents were not allowed to see them. I mean, there are tear-jerking, heart-wrenching stories one after the other, just right along the lines of what you're saying, Tom. So one thing is you can't even overemphasize overstate how bad it is. But the other thing is, here again, we come back to this whole religious thing, because what they do is they try to play the religious card to trump those arguments.
Yeah.
The first thing they'll do is they'll hide and they'll lie, like, oh, no, we don't do disconnection, we bring families together. Well, the evidence against that is overwhelming, and it is going to come out in more and more books and articles and so on and so forth, in my opinion, throughout this year. And so then their fallback is, well, it's like shunning, and they're not the only quote-unquote religion that shuns, and you can't look into it. Well, wait a minute. One, we talked about how dramatically huge it is, but also I submit that what they do in disconnection is greatly different than what, you know, an Amish community might do to shun somebody that violated their policies or something, right?
Yeah.
In Scientology, you know, well, look at it. Do you think, let's take a case that happens all the time. Somebody sits on an e-meter, and low levels of electricity are run through this person for hours and hours and hours at a time over days, weeks, months, or years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're constantly suggested that they're responsible for certain things, that they're wrong, that if they ever disagree with Scientology, they're bad, and they must pony up and continue to give all their finances to Scientology. Well, after they get off of these meters and this electricity running through their body, they're taking to registrars and so forth, where there are hundreds of examples of illegal or immoral, hard pressure sales tactics used on them. Now, if they are not going to go for it, and if they are not going to pony up and give all their money to Scientology or what have you, then they face family disconnection. I mean, if they end up getting declared what they call a suppressive person that we talked about last time, they're no longer going to be able to see their kids that are in Scientology, or their spouse is going to have to divorce and so on and so forth. And I submit that's not like shunning, you know, in an Amish community or whatever. But the point is, they'll take one little principle like that and try and confuse it. They'll try to cover it with lies.
Yeah.
And if they can't completely cover it with lies, they'll try and cover it with some form of religious cloaking. And I will tell you that what is ultimately going to stop these abusive practices is this information getting out publicly. And whether it's whatever combination it is of books, press, criminal investigations, civil suits, what have you, in however many countries, it's the truth getting out that is the only thing that's going to handle it. And that's why I support, for example, FactNet has that questionnaire, that 140-some questions. And some people might feel, well, FactNet might not be big enough to really do something about it or whatever. Well, you know what? They are collecting the data. They are getting information, and they can share it with the right people. And if you don't mind, this huge data collection on the very things that we've just been discussing there's five things that will be done with all the information collected. And boy, if this wouldn't handle the situation, I don't know what would. But if I can quote from what those five short things are.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, it says, this is the quote. What will be done with the information from this questionnaire? It will be used to force Scientology to stop abusing its members, former members, and critics through ethical use of justice systems throughout the world. One. It will be used to assemble summary reports for government agencies responsible to protect the public safety and mental health. These summary reports will compel the various government agencies to open new investigations into Scientology. Two, it will help to file new legal actions in the U.S. and other countries, such as civil RICO, Racketeering Influence and Corrupt Organization Act lawsuit, and an all past victims class action lawsuit. The U.S. Supreme Court recently ruled that the RICO statutes could be used against groups forwarding ideological positions if a pattern could be shown of threatened violence, harassment, or actual violence. Boy, is that an understatement in organized Scientology. Anyway,
yeah.
This ruling is an abortion rights case. This ruling in an abortion rights case broadens RICO use beyond organized crime in the traditional sense to include cases like Scientology. So whether or not that will work, I don't know, but that's part of the intention. The other three, briefly, are three. It will assist ongoing civil or criminal litigation. 4, it will be used to challenge the fraud of Scientology's nonprofit or religious tax-exempt status with the IRS in the U.S. and with similar agencies in other countries. And lastly, 5, it will assist investigative media reporters seeking to call the public's attention to Scientology's ongoing human rights abuses. And really, if one looks at those 5 things, I can't see anything that a really decent person could really be upset about. It's all meant to get the truth out, and that's why I support it. And the real thing now is more and more people are speaking out, and obviously I can't say anything on here that I wouldn't want out broadly.
Yeah.
So I will say that I think a lot of things are upcoming as more and more people speak out. And I think more and more people are about to go public with many of these things. Now, we've talked about abuses, but there's other things. So let me just couch this in my opinion category.
Sure.
I believe that part of what's going to come out in this next year are people that will be willing to testify on such things as tremendous lies to the IRS as part of their exemption application. Now, there's a lot of data publicly available on the internet which shows pieces of their filings or questions they've answered to the IRS and how they've answered it. And many of them are full of lies. You know, things where Miscavige and company are talking about how certain people control things, when we know the truth is Miscavige controlled things, where he might have even beat those people or punched those people, or he was hiding from the IRS the fact that he controlled it. 2, in my opinion, there's going to be testimony on projects that they did to prepare information for the IRS, on records of old companies like Religious Research Foundation, the Church of Scientology, California, and that were fraudulent, were phony records. It was done under a woman by the name of Ellen Reynolds, someone I know to be a very wonderful person,
yeah.
and who ran audits projects that I believe we're going to find people that will testify that much of the information that was turned over to the IRS was phony. Other people will testify, and there has been some stuff on the internet on this last part already, where many records were hidden or buried so the IRS couldn't see it. Well, first of all, I think one's going to see a lot coming out in the next year. In fact, even websites devoted to the IRS submission itself that is line by line going to go into and say, this one was a lie, and here's why it's a lie. This was untruth, here's why it's the truth. And that data turned over to the Criminal Investigations Division of the IRS, the FBI, and so forth. And I believe that the only reason that things aren't already dramatically done to stop these people from these kinds of abuses and lies is that people haven't really coordinated on it, which is why I support things like the FactNet thing. But it doesn't just have to be FactNet. In fact, in our last conversation, we talked at some length about various other options. You know, just sending a letter to your congressman, you know, if you remember, you know, telling your own truthful story so that hopefully they can get together and get things done.
And I
submit that
Larry,
there's enough people out, and there's enough people. Many people are not speaking out now because they fear a fight with organized Scientology, that organized Scientology will bankrupt them in litigation. Or, even more dramatically, many people aren't speaking out because they still have some family member in that they don't want to lose. And that is so incredibly sad, but I'm just saying that as each month goes by, one or two or more of those people are able to speak more now, and I think something will be done about it.
Yeah, how does somebody find out more about FactNet?
I wish I was on the computer right now, but they actually have a website, and there's also one thing that I can say.
Yeah.
If you go, here's one way to find 3 postings about the criminal investigations questionnaire. If you go on to Alt Religion Scientology, you know, ARS, I post is what's called SME, SME. So if you do search for SME, and then they'll say SME, and then you click and you see one of my posts, the SME, and then right next to my name, it will say profile, and you click on profile, and it will be all of my posts. And then once you do that, you clicked on view all, and then you just scroll, and you see the ones that talk about FactNet. And they give links to the actual FactNet site, the actual FactNet questionnaire. That might be an easy way offhand. I wish I actually had their website and all that right here.
All right.
To give to people, but that's one way to find the questionnaire. The other thing is anybody could feel free to email me, and I will get that form, and it's Larry, L-A-R-R-Y, Bren, B-R-E-N, 12345, at AOL.com. And I would be very glad to give them the link to the FactNet questionnaires and to FactNet itself.
Okay.
So, you know, whether or not one used FactNet, there's, like, for example, I can't obviously give specifics, but there's nothing stops anyone going with their information to just, I mean, the FBI, is, you can walk into your local FBI office and ask to speak with a duty officer and actually hand in any evidence you'd like to hand in or tell your story, and they will interview you.
Yeah.
And there's certain things that I believe are being coordinated on that right now that I support as well. I mean, it doesn't just have to be the questionnaire, but the questionnaire is mind-boggling. I mean, it goes into tremendous specifics of crimes or frauds or hidden things or ones that are alleged to exist.
Yeah. We're going to take, Larry, we're going to take a quick station break here.
Oh, okay.
And we will be back after this quick break with Larry Brennan. You're listening to The Edge, and I'm your host, Tom Smith.
You're listening to WXYB, Indian Rocks Beach, Tampa, 1520 AM, the voice of Hillsborough Community College.
Talk radio.
The revolution will be broadcast.
It's been 4 hours now, and Tom Cruise still will not come out of the closet. Hundreds of onlookers have gathered here in hopes that the celebrity will finally give in.
Tom Cruise, this is Park County Police. Please come out of the closet. Everybody here just wants you to come out of the closet, Tom. Nobody's going to be mad. Everything's going to be all right. Just come out of the closet.
We're back with Larry Brennan. That was a little bit of South Park from the episode Trapped in the Closet. Larry Brennan was with the Organized Scientology, Church of Scientology. He was director of all legal operations outside of litigation worldwide from mid-76 through mid-81. We've been talking today about various abuses and improprieties in Organized Scientology. And if you are a victim of those things or you're a concerned citizen, what you can do about them. Larry, you want to continue where you left off on this program? Looks like we've lost him here. I'm going to have to give him a call right back. Well, we've not been able to reconnect. I don't know what's going on here. We got a call dropped out, but we have been talking today. He was going over what you can do, getting hold of FactNet and other organizations to, like the FBI, writing your congressman, to actually report these abuses that you find, and they definitely should be reported. Larry?
If you can hear me, I'm getting a lot of interference now, and I can't hear you. I'm going to hang up if you want to try to call again.
Okay, well, that is not, he's got, looks like some phone problems.
Hello?
Yeah, Larry?
Yeah, I don't know what's happening. I'm getting all this interference.
Okay, well, you can just keep talking here. We're going to be finishing up. We come back from break, and you're welcome to continue.
I'm sorry, I'm losing whatever this connection is, if you can hear me.
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead. We can hear you, Larry.
I don't, Tom, can you hear what I'm saying right now?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, Larry, we're here. Yeah. All right. I guess what I'm going to do is just the rest of the hour here, just kind of go over basic points here of what he was covering. Basically, the points that he went over were that the religious scholars that are being used have been previously briefed on certain practices kind of like the good side, but they haven't taken a look at the whole subject. When you take a look at the whole subject of organized Scientology, particularly the practices as a whole and how and the effect, the impact it has on families, it's pretty horrendous. There's just a number of other things as far as the practice that it has, and it differs from can differ from the actual policies, where a policy may say, well, do one thing. What matters really is the practice, what is happening, the impact it has on families and other people. This sort of thing has to, well, reform, if it can reform, hopefully something like that would occur, but it doesn't really look like such a thing is imminent. The organization, not being a having a board of directors that is effective per se, being a top-down sort of dictatorship, it's not likely to occur unless there's a change in the dictator. Most religious organizations, like even the Catholic Church, while they do have a pope, they still have an effective board of directors. The pope is someone who is elected, and there is a hierarchy there that can moderate a lot of the policies and practices of that religion. Scientology lacks those things, and even though nominally it does have a board of directors, those people, they're essentially all lame ducks. The real guy in charge is, according to, and this has been verified by Elliot Abelson's recent statement, the real guy in charge is David Miscavige. He's the dictator. What he wants done, what he says should be done, is what happens, for better or for worse, and as we're seeing, it's often for worse. I would hope that anybody who has been harmed by Scientology take advantage of FACTNET. You can actually go into a search engine and type in FACTNET, F-A-C-T-N-E-T, and you'll get their website. I think it's factnet.org. Type that into a search engine, you will get that, and you can actually, it's a good resource to finding out and reporting and getting help if you have been abused by such practices as fair game or disconnection, whether you've seen some practices relating to organized Scientology which have impacted your business or your life. You can actually, and this is not to say, I mean, you definitely should, if you see things that are illegal, you should definitely report them to law enforcement. But other matters, you certainly can go to FACTNET and get more information and assistance on that. Sorry we lost Larry there, but I guess that about does it for today's program. I'm Tom Smith, the producer and host of The Edge. We will be back again next week with another interesting guest, and thank you, listeners, for being with me on The Edge. Bye-bye.